Natural Living with Gary Nall, Mondays and Tuesdays at 3 p.m. on the Progressive Radio Network.
Happy day.
Oh, happy day
when Jesus wore.
Live from New York City, it's the Gary Nall Show. And now, your host, Gary Nall.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Nall, and I'd like to welcome you to this Empowerment Hour. We're going to take on the issues that both the left and the right refuse to address, such as natural approaches to healing disease, corporations to government, give us more, tax us less. What do we say in return to corporations? Commentaries galore today. I've chosen not to have a guest in this hour so I can talk about Mike Adams. Nearly all drug trials scientifically invalid due to the influence of the mind. Big pharma science dissolves into wishful thinking. Also on the environment, thawing permafrost likely will accelerate global warming. However, that gets to the whole idea that what we're seeing now, with massive cold and rain and then drought, is leading to energy shortages, food scarcity, and recession. This could all cause the failure of our industrial civilization within the next 9 years. That's according to the Institute for Policy Research and Development. Did you know that you're being eavesdropped on? Not by our FBI, not by the CIA, not by Homeland Security, by codename Echelon. U.S. eavesdropping on the whole world through Echelon spy intercepts. It's all illegal. Why isn't anyone talking about it? Obama mixes religion and government. Oh, hold on a second. Didn't James Madison, the father of the U.S. Constitution, say no to that? We'll talk about how much money are religious organizations and front groups getting. That means a lot to the people who want to get their congregation voting for them. Global poverty, food riots, it's happening, it's coming. And how about the energy companies that see China unable to supply its own energy needs, so they're going to start opening up massive amounts of America's West in Montana and Wyoming to get rid of the soft coal, low sulfur coal, to supply their needs. Well, how that will then help us with our environmental pollution? It won't. It'll contribute. And a very important commentary that gives a different point of view than anything you've heard on the left or right media. Harvey Wasserman on fighting the five fascisms in Wisconsin, Ohio. I'm Gary Nall. I'll be taking calls throughout this program on all the issues that you find important. Questions, comments, please feel free to call 888-874-4888. 888-874-4888. Most Americans, at least those who have teenage daughters, knows that there have been a massive program to get your daughter and now your son to take the Gardasil vaccine to protect against human papillomavirus. Well, that's a relatively common sexually transmitted disease passed on through genital contact, usually through sexual intercourse. What they don't tell you is that just a small variety of many different types of that will cause some vaginal warps, the papillomas. However, other forms of virus can cause abnormal cell growth on the lining of the cervix that many years later, about 25 years later, can turn into cancer. When you look at the actual studies on Gardasil, it does not prevent cervical cancer, nor does it treat it. Then what's the purpose of it? A lot of women have died using it. Here's what you should know. there are natural approaches to the human papillomavirus, not the least of which is that the infections are usually harmless, and they absolutely go away, in most cases, with no treatment. The body's own defense system eliminates the viruses. Often, women experience no signs, symptoms, or health problems whatsoever. Now, the median age of women when they are initially diagnosed with cervical cancer is 48. New cervical cancer cases and deaths are uncommon below 35, and virtually non-existent below the age of 20. Cervical cancer is not as common as other types of cancer. Rates of skin cancer, colon cancer, lung cancer, and breast cancer are much, much higher. In fact, women are nearly 1,500% more likely to be stricken with breast cancer than cervical cancer. And yet the big push in America? Gardasil. It was licensed in 2006. It was designed to protect against just 4 of the 100 different human papilloma strains. Each dose contains polysorbate 80, 225 micrograms of aluminum. In Europe, Cervarix is the licensed vaccine. It is named by gene cloning cells of a worm-like insect. This vaccine contains 500 micrograms of aluminum. That's enough to cause severe neurological damage. It can kill and does neurons in your brain. By just this week, more than 20,000 adverse reaction reports pertaining to Gardasil were filed with the U.S. government. That's a lot, considering that only about 2% of adverse effects from any vaccine are ever reported. In the case reported to the FDA, 89 deaths were described due to blood clots, heart disease in young girls taking Gardasil. They also have other life-threatening paralysis, seizures, convulsions, swollen limbs, chest pain, heart irregularities, kidney failure, visual disturbances, arthritis, difficulty breathing, severe rashes, persistent vomiting, miscarriages, menstrual irregularities, reproductive complications, genital warts. You heard me right. Let's say this again. What was meant to prevent genital warts actually causes genital warts, Gardasil. Once again, your USDA, your CDC has lied to you. They've manipulated you. And the vaccine manufacturers and their front groups and scientists for hire have convinced state legislators to make it mandatory. It should not be. According to Dr. Diane Harper, director of the Gynecological Cancer Prevention Research Group, University of Missouri, quote, the rate of serious adverse effects from Gardasil is greater than the incidence rate of cervical cancer. Well, hold on a second. Let's just put this in perspective and slow it down. The treatment is worse than the disease. More women are getting sick and dying from the treatment than are from the cervical cancer. Gardasil is being promoted as 100% effective. It is not. They lie. And this is a deceptive assessment of its true ability to protect against cervical cancer. Gardasil is effective against just 2 strains of cancer-causing human papillomavirus, the ones included in the vaccine, but researchers have identified at least 15 cancer-causing human papilloma strains. This does nothing against those. Gardasil will not prevent infection with human papillomavirus types, not contain the vaccine. In fact, during clinical trials of the vaccine, hundreds of women who received Gardasil contracted human papillomavirus disease. Furthermore, the drug maker warns women in its product insert, quote, vaccination does not substitute for routine cervical cancer screening. That means a pap smear. Gardasil is approved for women from 9 to 26. However, the vaccine is not effective in women who've already been exposed to the human papilloma strains, including the vaccine. 24% of females are sexually active by age 15. 40% of all females in the United States are sexually active by 16. 70% by 18. And that's from Vital Health Statistics, Volume 23. Hence, the vast majority of young teenagers have already been exposed to one or more of the human papillomavirus strains before they've been given Gardasil. This is why the American Cancer Society does not agree with the CDC's recommendation to vaccinate older teens and younger women. So everything about this is a scam and it's a fraud. Now, what are the alternatives to the human papilloma vaccine? Numerous studies show convincing evidence that diet and nutritional factors can prevent many types of cancer, including cervical cancer, and even eliminate precursors to disease. For example, the more fruits and vegetables, especially, have been shown to have beneficial effects against malignancies. That's according to Nutrition and Cancer, Volume 18, page 1 to 29. Among these nutritional factors are folate or folic acid, a member of the B complex, that has a very impressive record against this. Several studies show that low folate levels increase the effect of other risk factors for cervical cancer. Conversely, high folate levels appear to be beneficial against human papillomavirus lesions and other risk factors for cervical cancer. For example, in a recent study published in a leading cancer journal, researchers found, quote, evidence of a protective role for folate, unquote, with regard to premalignant lesions of the cervix. That was in Cancer Causes and Control, Volume 14, page 859. Several studies also show that folic acid supplementation can reverse cervical lesions in patients using oral contraceptives, a known risk factor for precancerous conditions. And that's in American Journal of Obstetrics and Gynecology, Volume 166, page 803. And the Journal of the American Medical Association, Volume 267, page 528. And the American Journal of Clinical Nutrition, Volume 35, page 73. A study published in the International Journal of Cancer found that women who ate the least amount of tomatoes had a 500% increased risk of precancerous lesions. Another study measured and compared micronutrient levels in the blood of women with cervical cancer to micronutrient levels in the blood of non-cancer. And what they found, the more lycopene from those tomatoes and watermelons and red apples and vitamin A, the less amount of cervical cancer. That's Nutrition and Cancer, Volume 31. Another study published in the American Journal of Epidemiology concluded that low levels of vitamin C intake is an independent contributor to high-grade human papilloma lesions. Therefore, high levels would protect you. So let's just summarize here for a moment. Cervical cancer is very rare in young women. Older women, not preteen or teenage girls, are most at risk. Cervical cancer is not as common as all the other cancers for women. The human papillomavirus contains extremely dangerous aluminum. The FDA has already received hundreds and thousands of reports of adverse effects. Some girls and young women develop genital warts and vaginal lesions that after they receive the vaccine. The vaccine has been linked to reproductive complications, including very high levels of miscarriages and menstrual irregularities. And the vaccine's highly publicized 98 to 100% efficiency rate is a lie. There is no evidence to support that. The vaccine is only designed to prevent a limited number of premalignant lesions that often disappear or resolve on their own. The vaccine has never, not once, shown that it can actually prevent cervical cancer. The vaccine is only designed to protect against four of the more than 100 different strains of human papillomavirus. The vaccine does not directly target at least 13 strains of cancer-causing human papillomavirus, so recipients of the vaccine may still get cervical cancer. And numerous studies show that women who make a few simple changes in their diet, eating lots of fruits and vegetables, having juices, taking your B-complex and folic acid and lots of vitamin C, that's what's going to eliminate precursors to cervical cancer and prevent the disease. Information shared from Neil Miller, medical research journalist and director of Think Twice Global Vaccine Institute. Next up, you got high blood pressure? Well, I was at a screening on Saturday night of a new film to come out, a documentary that was well made. I was one of the panelists that spoke with a full house downtown in Soho. And there in the film, they had the spokesperson, a medical doctor for the American Heart Association, suggesting watch your cholesterol. But here is the problem. The American Heart Association says that 200 is a safe level for your cholesterol. Not true. I think 125 is a good number. Well, it turns out, and the documentary supported this, that at 200 on your cholesterol, you've just increased your risk by one-third of dying of a heart attack or stroke. And what was important is it showed how difficult it is for people to change their diets, and diet is the number one reason you have high cholesterol and high blood pressure. And then get out there and exercise. This is from Science Daily, from the American Academy of Neurology's annual meeting. Quote, middle-aged men and women who have cardiovascular issues, such as high cholesterol and high blood pressure, may not only be at risk of heart attack, but an increased risk of losing your memory and loss of cognition. So get off the weight, lower your cholesterol, exercise, and watch things improve. And finally, fenugreek. A daily supplement of an extract of fenugreek can enhance male libido and help with the maintenance of normal testosterone levels. That's according to a double-blind, randomized, placebo-controlled trial published in Phytotherapy Research. So get your fenugreek in your diet each day. And finally, consumption of a whole grain-based fiber diet will reduce the risk of death from cardiovascular disease. I'll quote this. It's from the National Institutes of Health, AARP Diet and Health Study. Quote, and this is also from the National Cancer Institute. Dietary fiber sourced from whole grains may reduce the risk of death from cardiovascular, infectious, and respiratory disease. Well, we knew that, and that's why you're eating spelt, amaranth, quinoa, all of the millet, brown rice, the whole grains. Makes a difference, saves a life, and that's all good. And that was published also in the Journal of the American Medical Association. I'm Gary Nall, back in a moment with our commentaries and your phone calls. Please stay with us. I'd like to welcome all of you from all over the world. I'm Gary Nall. If you miss a program, just go to our archives, 24/7, progressiveradionetwork.com. That is the number one voice for independent and progressive and humanistic minds in the media in America. And we thank all of you for coming there. Remember, we have no advertising campaign. You haven't seen a single ad anywhere for that, and yet we just invited 100,000 new listeners on. I mean, we're growing just phenomenally well. So we thank you. All of us are concerned about what's happening in Wisconsin, or should be, and also in Ohio, and I'm sure going other states as well. But according to Harvey Wasserman, who I've had on this program, when I had Harvey on, we talked about the dangers of low-level radiation and our failing nuclear infrastructure, which we refuse to acknowledge, including hot spots for cancer, especially breast cancer, of women living within 30 to 50 miles of a nuclear facility. Because we're told, well, there's no harm. Turns out there is. The escalating confrontations in Wisconsin, which from what I understand just before I went on the show today, was as many as 80,000 individuals met there today, and Ohio, are ultimately about preventing the United States from becoming a full-on fascist state. Now, this is going to challenge Glenn Beck, Sean Hannity, many people within the Tea Party movement, but not all, those who've been co-opted by the Sarah Palin faction and the Koch brothers, believe that it's all about big government, and that these entitlements by these overpaid state workers, that's the problem. So let's get rid of those problems and we'll be fine. Well, the stakes couldn't be higher or more clear. As defined by its inventor, Benito Mussolini. Fascism is corporate control of the state. There are ways to beat around the bush. Paul Krugman has recently written about oligarchy. But it's time to end all illusions and call what we now confront by its real name. The fights in Wisconsin and Ohio and in numerous other states are about saving the last shreds of American democracy. They burn down to five basic realities. Number one, the bulwark of modern democracy is the trade union. This has been true since the beginning of the Industrial Revolution. All social programs can trace their roots to union activism, as can the protection of our civil liberties. The first Germans Hitler put into concentration camps were neither Jews nor Gypsies. They were the trade unionists. The attacks on state workers in Wisconsin and Ohio and elsewhere have nothing to do with balancing budgets. That could easily be done by destroying collective bargaining. For the hard right, this is about busting unions, the last organized force standing in the way of total corporate control of the United States by the rich and richer. Number two, the material essence of fascism is the extreme separation of rich and poor, a massive transfer of wealth from those on the bottom to those on the top. The unbalanced budgets in Ohio and Wisconsin are rooted in huge tax cuts given to the rich at the expense of the middle and lower classes. Widespread poverty among those who might otherwise rebel is essential to fascist control of a government. A largely ignored aspect of this fight is the hundreds of billions of dollars currently locked up in union, government, and Social Security pension funds. With unions destroyed, this huge cache of dollars will fall quickly into corporate hands. The additional benefit for the financial elite will be tens of millions of impoverished elders desperate for low-wage jobs in virtual slave labor situations. Number three, the crisis crippling states everywhere is directly related to the massive destruction of social resources by war. Since the end of the New Deal and World War II, the American elite have engineered the biggest dump of material wealth by military means in human history. The trillions of dollars of pure material waste poured into the Cold War and those in Southeast Asia and Central America and the Middle East and Southwest Asia and elsewhere could easily have clothed, housed, fed, educated, and provided otherwise decent lives for every human being on the planet. Instead, poverty, desperation, and stratification have been guaranteed. The entire economic crisis now gripping the United States can be directly traced to the military budget, which exceeds the sum of what's being spent by all other nations combined. In a brilliant recent column, Robert Greenwald, who I've had on this program to talk about things such as this, points out that the entire alleged shortfall in Wisconsin could be covered by bringing just 180 troops home from Afghanistan. But the purpose of that deployment is to undermine national security, not to protect it. A frightening, impoverished, insecure nation is one dependent upon its fascist elite. Democracy demands and protects true material security among the people as a whole. That's what really is at stake in the battle to cut the military budget. The fights in Ohio and Wisconsin are surface manifestations of that bigger battle. Number four, Mussolini also made it clear that corporate control of the media is essential to fascist rule. Whoever would seize power first took the radio stations, then the television stations. Now the internet is under attack. The free flow of information is fascism's ultimate energy. So the relentless Fox's portrayal of the battles in Wisconsin and Ohio is pitting, quote, responsible, austerity-minded, unquote, governors versus, quote, lazy, irresponsible state workers, unquote, is utterly predictable. So is the appearance of the media-created Tea Party movement on the side of the corporations. It's standard corporate procedure to invent a faux grassroots fight to fight unions and working people. So finding phony corporate populists like Sarah Palin and New Jersey's Christie in the right-wing media limelight is utterly predictable. And finally, it is no accident that the job-loving, union-hating governors of Wisconsin and Ohio, along with Florida, have rejected billions in federal funds for rebuilding passenger rail service that would create thousands of jobs. A corporate state relies on central control of coal, oil, nuclear, and gas. Rail service threatens the power of the oil and auto lobbies. Renewable energy would replace centralized fossil nuclear sources with decentralized solar and photovoltaic panels, biofuels, windmills, increased efficiency, and the like. The push for federal nuclear loan guarantees is central to the corporate state. The anti-union governor of Ohio strongly focused on killing not only train service, but all incentives for renewable energy. His energy plan is for extreme right-wing nuke-based monopolies like First Energy to run the show. Atomic power is the ultimate weapon against community control. For decades, the term fascist has been dismissed from use in this country, and perhaps rightly so. Corporations have been dominant in the U.S. since the 1980s, but we have managed to maintain a modicum of democracy. It's hard to see that happening if the remnants of the organized labor movement are crushed in Wisconsin, Ohio. Both sides have long, important traditions of union activism. In the wake of Citizens United, with the courts, media, Congress, and presidency firmly in corporate control, we see no easy road to victory for working people. Your thoughts? 888-874-4888. 888-874-4888. And to add on to that, something from today from Richard Wolff. Corporations to government, give us more and tax us less. Quote, a short paragraph. Nothing better shows corporate control over the government than Washington's basic response to the current economic crisis. First we had the rescue, and then the recovery. Trillions of public money flowed to the biggest U.S. banks, insurance companies that bailed them out while we waited for benefits to trickle down to the rest of us. As usual, the trickle-down part has not happened. Large corporations and their investors kept the money for themselves. Their profits and stock markets recovered nicely. We get unemployment, home foreclosures, job benefit cuts, and growing job insecurity. As the crisis hits states and cities, politicians avoid raising corporate taxes in favor of cutting government services and jobs. Might government bias favoring corporations be deserved? A reward for taxes they pay? No. Corporations, especially the larger corporations, have avoided taxes as effectively as they control government expenditures to benefit them. Compare income taxes received by the federal government from individuals and from corporations, and guess who ends up paying the most? We as individuals. Now, in a moment, I'm going to play you something that is important. I want you to listen to something. We're going to cue this up. It's all about the Federal Reserve, and I'll give that to you in a moment, because the Federal Reserve is now suggesting that we, the banks, have zero, no reserves. Why have reserves? Well, it's only a mockery anyhow. Here's my suggestions for solutions, so listen up. First, in each state, if the federal government were to do the following, the entire state debt, meaning that part of the budget that cannot be balanced, in all 50 states is only $120 billion. If the federal government guaranteed that with the provision that all redundancy, all inefficiency, monitored not by government but by outside independent citizens groups, so that the government that we do have at the state level actually is effective, that works, and works for the people, that would be important. Then at least the states wouldn't have to cut back on their essential important services. Then start planting trees where they are needed in all 50 states. I suggest starting with 5 million and going up maybe to 20 million trees per state. That would reduce global warming. It would increase our water tables. It would help with floodplains. It would do an enormous amount of good, and it would hire younger people. Then in every state, we should take all abandoned buildings and all empty buildings and have the federal government come in and bulldoze it all, and in its place have a whole new de-ghettoization program through a nonprofit foundation not controlled by the federal government and not controlled by the states, and no way that anyone can buy anything, this would be a trust. The trust would be paid for by corporate donations. For every dollar a corporation gives, they get to deduct $2. That immediately would send a signal to every corporation, this is the best tax break you're going to get. This is up right up there with the oil depletion allowance. And here's how it would work. Let's just say that you have a community such as the Ninth Lower Ward of New Orleans, where I was just at last Saturday filming. It's devastated. One little street out of hundreds and hundreds of streets has 9 new homes built by Habitat for Humanity and Brad Pitt's organization. But all the rest of it, with a few exceptions, is just as it was after Katrina. So what if you were to go in there and clear out all those homes and build the type of energy efficient wind and solar homes that are built so as not to be affected by floods, that would have community services, drug addiction services, vocational schools, theater, arts and recreation, a holistic assisted living, community health clinics, farmers markets, in each and every one of them, where thousands of people could live. They would be able to live there by paying a small rent, but would not own it. Therefore, you do not gentrify, you do not privatize, and you do not profit, causing an artificial bubble in there. You also do not pay people for land speculation, so you eliminate the speculators. In less than 3 years, we could de-ghettoize America and have quality of life places for at least 15 million Americans to live and work. Next, the federal government takes the money it gives in just 1 year to the wars that give us nothing but pain and heartbreak, and we give interest-free loans to all small businesses that would qualify. Now do the math. Let's say that we have 5 million small businesses that would qualify for a loan, maximum $5 million, minimum $1 million. The caveat is that for every $1 million of this loan to a small business person, and the federal government that is incompetent and incapable of doing anything right when it comes to judging anything, I believe that 50% of the federal government should be completely deconstructed, at least 50%. It's all corruption, pork barrel, and inefficient bureaucracy. But if we had efficiency, then let community business leaders in every community in America sit on councils that look at the applications because they know their community, they know what they have too many of, too little of, and what's likely to work. And then they would give the recommendations for the people applying for this. And let's say you got a $3 million loan. You're at zero interest and you don't have to pay a penny back for 3 years. But by the way, that's the same deal that every other major corporation in America gets from the Federal Reserve. But for every $1 million, you have to hire 2 employees at $30 an hour, a living wage. If you had 5 million people, each getting $3 million, that's 15 million. You've just ended most of unemployment and given gainful employment instead of service industry McDonald's employment. You've de-ghettoized America, you've reforested our country, you've put the youth back to work, and you have stabilized the local environment. Then go about re-industrializing America. Bring steel and other industries back to America with high tariffs on any imports. And stop borrowing money from China, and hence stop buying cheap junk from China that used to be made as better stuff in the United States. If you care about America, then act it. Corporate America cares nothing about anything except its bottom line, and we have to be more intelligent than they think we are. I'm Gary Noll. Those are my thoughts. You have your turn now. 888-874-4888. 888-874-4888. And also, I believe we should eliminate the IRS completely. I just wouldn't tear down the building. I would immortalize the building the same way you would a gigantic prison, like Alcatraz. All right? This was a terrible place of mental torture. These were the deviants of society, the parasites that put people in terror and fear. That's how I would immortalize that. Then, I would give one flat tax to every person and every corporation in America. You could not deduct anything. You paid 10%. Do you realize how few corporations pay anything? I mean, they should be paying billions of dollars from their billions and billions of dollars of profit. They don't pay anything in most cases. They offshore their profits. They hide their profits. They get all these deductions through the tax loops and a $55,000 tax code that's just arcane. This is all stupid. This is government at how it was never meant to be, but as it actually is in the majority of cases. Inefficient, corrupt, banal, where bureaucrats act as intimidating fascists instead of being servants of the people. I would eliminate all intelligence agencies, since there doesn't seem to be anyone with an IQ above 17 in any of them, since he never seemed to know anything. And instead, well, I've given my thoughts. Time for yours. I'm Gary Nall, back in a moment. Please stay with us. Something new. I'm Gary Nall. One other thing I would do, I would ban the Federal Reserve. I would turn it into a national museum of criminals. America's shysters, con men, Ponzi scheme artists, pathologically dysfunctional, sociopathic personalities. I would have Ben Bernanke and all the Federal Reserve chairmen from all the central banks and Alan Greenspan as the grand master puppeteer. I would kind of put him in the backdrop. Behind him would be a scene from, well, The Wizard of Oz. He would be the wizard, but the curtain would be pulled back, and finally we'd see what pathetic excuses of predictors of financial stability these people are. They have given away secretly $13 trillion in cash and guarantees to their friends, the hedge fund thieves. Well, that's redundant. To the equity partnership guys. Remember, these are the guys that, starting with Michael Milken and T. Boone Pickens and Carl Icahn and Saul Steinberg and Ivan Botsky, they used to be called green mailers, then corporate raiders, and now they've dressed up the name, sanitized it. It's like taking a shoe that fell into a septic system and saying, this isn't a stinky, rotty, fetid shoe. This is a boutique designer shoe with special fragrance. Well, that's what the equity partnerships are. They come in and they buy your company. They load it up with debt. They take that debt for themselves as a profit, and now the poor company struggles. 45,000 corporations have gone broke or left the country in the last 11 years. They are no small measure responsible for it, yet they have no problem getting all the money they want. All their friends on Wall Street, like Goldman Sachs, created the bridge loans. Everybody was feeding at that trough. And yet these are the people that we respect. These are the high priests. These are the people that when they walk down the street, you would have thought that the Pope was walking, because all the young Turks, all the guys who are on super steroids, the guys who can't think but only react with excessive erections to these magnets. Well, anyone ever stop and ask, how many people suffered today because of your greed? We won't ask those questions. The left won't dare touch the cathedral from which he gets a lot of money, George Soros, a pathologically disturbed person when it comes to making money. He doesn't care how he makes it, including trading in currencies. George, what would happen had your family been a poor Mexican family or poor Russian family, starved to death? Would you have then thought about how you make your money? But as long as you give your money to the left and Democracy Now, they won't say boo to you, will they? Now on the right, the Koch brothers. My God, what a sorry excuse for human beings. And in the middle of the Tea Party, actually thinks they know what they're doing. Sorry, you don't. Now, here's what you should know about the Federal Reserve.
Good morning, Bob. I'm glad I ran into you this morning. I read in the business section that the Federal Reserve is printing money.
Oh yeah, they've been doing that for years.
Okay, but shouldn't that be illegal? I mean, that sounds like counterfeiting.
Not at all. Counterfeiting is when a private citizen manufactures money in his basement for a B-rated movie. Printing money is when the Federal Reserve artificially increases the money supply.
How can the Fed print money, legally, when the B-rated movie actor gets arrested at the airport by the FBI with the counterfeit money in his duffel bag?
Because the Federal Reserve doesn't really print it, they just electronically create it out of thin air and credit the banks with the money.
And that's not counterfeiting?
No.
And it's perfectly legal?
Exactly.
And what's backing the fake money created by the Federal Reserve?
Nothing.
Nothing?
Not a damn thing.
This doesn't make any sense. Why would they do that?
Because the Fed gives the fake money to the banks, so they can lend it to American consumers to buy more shit they can't afford.
So why aren't people buying more shit they can't afford?
Because the banks don't give a rat's ass if Americans buy anything or not.
You lost me.
Just think about it for a moment. 5 years ago everyone had a big house, nice cars, a 50-inch flat-screen TV, and no damn money.
It's a beautiful country.
And all those mortgages and car notes and credit card debts were used as collateral for bonds.
That's dumb.
No, dumb is when you bought a $600,000 house on a $70,000 income.
I only paid $550.
Oh, that changes everything, except the fact that you still lost your house.
Condo.
In any event, all that debt was used as collateral for 38% of the bond market. The bonds were referred to as asset-backed securities and the banks made up the prices of these bonds themselves.
If I understand you correctly, the banks lent me money to buy the house I couldn't afford and used the mortgage I couldn't pay to collateralize bonds they sold to unsuspecting investors.
Yes.
Then the banks made up the price themselves.
Yes.
Okay, but what about the free markets?
Free markets are only important when politicians want to pass pro-business legislation, not when businesses need the government's help. So when people didn't pay their mortgages, the bonds on the balance sheets of the banks weren't worth jack shit and the banks claimed the money they would have otherwise lent to consumers went up in smoke.
I don't see the connection.
Well, the Fed thought that if the banks couldn't lend anyone money, the economy would collapse.
But what does any of this have to do with printing money?
The Federal Reserve used the electronically created money and bought the asset-backed securities that weren't worth jack shit in the free markets because the banks needed liquid assets to lend to consumers.
To buy more shit they couldn't afford.
Which is why they didn't lend it to them.
What?
The Federal Reserve gave the banks fake money in exchange for the asset-backed securities, but instead of lending the money to consumers, they used the proceeds to invest in the stock market.
That's straight up gangster.
And that's why the stock market has been going up. When the Fed creates currency out of thin air, the value of the dollar goes down, and if you look at a chart of the value of the dollar and the stock market, you'll see that they move in the opposite direction. As one goes up, the other goes down.
Run that by me again.
The banks take the fake dollars that increases the money supply and correspondingly reduces the value of the dollar. Then they use that money to buy stocks. As the demand for stocks goes up, so do the prices.
And that's printing money.
It used to be referred to as printing money, but now they call it quantitative easing.
As in get a bottle of wine and some Barry White music.
No, as in the Fed buys the toxic assets off the balance sheets of the banks like we just discussed.
Why can't they say printing money?
Because the American public figured out that printing money was a bad thing, began to dress up in silly George Washington costumes and demand fiscal responsibility.
Go on.
Then the financial industry came up with another catchy slogan, because investors pay more attention to the private life of Tiger Woods than they do their portfolios. Remember the Goldilocks economy, the smooth landing, and the about the green shoots theory?
Yes, but I always thought that when the Federal Reserve expands the money supply, it causes inflation. So why haven't we seen interest rates go up?
Because the Federal Reserve also lends the banks more fake money that isn't backed by anything of value at 0.25%.
And let me guess.
The banks instead lend the same money back to the broke-ass government by purchasing treasury bonds that pay 3%.
Nobody's that stupid.
Studies show that 1/5 of Americans can't locate the United States on a map.
That's an anomaly.
But that's 20% of the population who don't know where the hell they live.
What does that have to do with the Federal Reserve lending money to the banks that the banks in turn use to buy treasury bonds?
Well, it seems the government owes $13.5 trillion and has a $1.5 trillion budget deficit.
And you talk about my bad financial decisions?
You can't print money.
You can't grow facial hair.
So the government borrows money by selling bonds to China and Japan, but foreign countries are beginning to realize we can't pay it back. To compensate for the decreasing international demand for our debt, the Federal Reserve gives fake money to the banks so they can use it to buy government bonds.
So the first batch, quantitative easing, wasn't enough, so now they're
printing money.
Printing money to lend to the banks so the banks can lend it back to the broke-ass government.
Yes. You see, the government has to refinance 36% of its debt in 2010.
And Bernie Madoff is in jail because?
And 60% of the debt will mature over the next 3 years.
Why does this sound familiar?
Essentially, this is the adjustable rate mortgage crisis on steroids, because more than half of the United States obligations come due by the end of 2013, and right now the government pays 1.25% on that debt, which will probably be refinanced at higher rates.
No, this sounds more like money laundering. The Federal Reserve manufactures illegitimate money and funnels it through the banks, so they can give it to the government in a more legitimate form. If you or I did this, we would go to jail.
Yes, you would go to jail, and those of you who work in Washington should go to jail. You should just get up each day, just go to hell to jail, because that's where you belong. My God, if the average American's IQ ever raised 4%, they'd figure all this out. The Federal Reserve prints money with no oversight and no dictates on what it can do. It has nothing to back up the money. It is a fiat currency. It then loans at 0.02%, which is zero interest, with no disclosed terms, meaning nothing that shows the collateral that they've gotten in return for this money, to major corporations, banks, corporations, Verizon, McDonald's, hedge funds, anyone who's in the loop of corporate America can get it, any amount of money they want, whenever they want it, from the Federal Reserve. Then, get this, they don't even have to pick the money up. They can have the money sitting there at the Federal Reserve, where they paid zero interest for it, and loan it back to the government at an interest rate that's above the 1.3 or 1.4 the government is going to pay. They could even then loan it out to Brazil or to China in currencies that are undervalued and take the upswing on that. So zero interest to the banks. They can make 4 to 5% interest easily, for which they paid zero. They have unlimited amounts. And now when the taxpayers are told we have to pay back $1 trillion in interest, do you ever ask, who gave us the money? Was it the Chinese? Didn't we give them treasury bills? Aren't they holding that? Is that the interest? Who do we have to pay these bonds to? Well, how about a large percent of that's the banks who got the money without ever taking possession of the money and paid no interest on the money, but they're making interest on us. That's this completely criminal scheme in Washington, D.C. Shame on the economists at George Washington University and every other university that calls itself a responsible institution for not demanding marches. Yet we will march for a lot of things, but by God, we never march against corruption, complicity, sedition of the United States Constitution, the Bill of Rights, by these people in Washington and their corporate sponsors on Wall Street. Let's see what you have to say about this. Your turn, 888-874-4888. I've been waiting on calls now. We've got one from Timothy from Hollywood, California. Hi, Timothy.
How are you doing, Gary?
Doing great. I'll be out there tomorrow morning. Everyone who wants to listen to our sister station, KPFK, I've been on 25 years for 6 hours every Wednesday morning from 3 o'clock to 9 o'clock on the East Coast and from midnight to 6 a.m. on the West Coast. So if you want to hear interesting commentaries and lots of phone calls on a lot of different philosophical topics, tomorrow morning, set your calendar, set your clock, get up a little early, and go to garynull.com, G-A-R-Y-N-U-L-L.com, and it'll link you right up through KPFK in Los Angeles. That said, do you ever listen to the show out there on KPFK, Timothy?
I've been listening to you for about 20 years.
Oh, good. How can we help you today?
Yes, I want to say, before I ask my question, or to say to you that we're trying to get the word out in Hollywood and entertainment industry about Progressive Radio Network.
Thank you. We appreciate that.
We feel that there's a blackout on you, and we don't appreciate it, so we're going to take responsibility and do it ourselves.
Good for you.
My question is this. Do you see any similarities between the fall of the Roman Empire and what's going on in America? I've just finished reading Decline and Fall of the Roman Empire.
Very similar in many respects.
Could you elaborate, please, Gary?
Well, yes, just look at the timeline. It took longer for the Roman Empire to fall, but one of the primary reasons it fell was because it had enormous debt. By continuing its whole empire reaches in the Far East and the northern areas, and they had to pay for their troops, clear up into Britannia, and they couldn't sustain all this. And if they brought their concentrated wealth and their great minds into Rome or to Italy, they could have survived and thrived. They were spread way too thin. And historically, wars are always the undoing of most civilizations. That was certainly the case with the Ottoman Empire as well. And also, you begin to see corruption within the power elite. Everything each day is about holding on to their power, aligning with the existing power until you can overthrow it or benefit from it. That is true in Washington today. You have people who are elected to go there, such as the Democrats, to get us out of Afghanistan and Iraq, and we get further in Afghanistan and Iraq. We doubled what we have spent up to that point on the war in Iraq and Afghanistan. Now we're in Pakistan and likely to go or abide by Israel's need to go in and do a preemptive war in Iran, which shouldn't be done. That will cause World War III, especially since 300 million people living in the Arab world. I'm combining now, for our purposes, both Persian and Arab together, 22 members of the Arab League, and 18 of them are despotic, and the others are faux democracies that are puppet democracies of our people. All that would come to an enormous falling out. You'd have Sunni, such as in Saudi Arabia and in Jordan, working against the Shia. And then their own countries would be in civil war. I predict that within the next 24 months, half of all the Middle Eastern countries will be overthrown.
The next 24 months, half.
I do not see this being military overthrows. I see being populist, and then combination of populist, both secular and religious groups, filling the void to create some sense of democracy. Now, remember, they don't care about America. All they care about is food, security, and jobs. Virtually all of the major uprisings in Tunisia, in Egypt, currently in Algeria, and are all because of a lack of food, a lack of jobs, and the high price of food, and the lack of freedoms of expression, freedoms of the press, freedoms of dissent, not allowing any other parties into the process. So don't look at just the heads like Mubarak of leaving. Look at the entire corporate and political apparatchiks being thrown out as well. So the first step of this nonviolent movement will be to get rid of the figureheads. But remember, they're merely figureheads. The real power base are the wealthy, mercantile, and ruling elite of the countries, representing anywhere from 5 to 15%. That will be the next thing, taking back the media. And this is all going to happen in the next 2 years, I believe. And then in the third year, you will see the working poor in the United States for the first time since the Great Depression go to the streets.
Do you feel that we have that much time, Gary?
We do. We are not in the same position. I'll tell you why. I just finished coming from around the United States. And what I saw on my trip, in city after city of driving it, and filming the new poor, not the old poor, the new poor, is that they still believe in either the Democrats or Republicans or Tea Parties or Libertarians or Constitutionalists or the Greens to get them out of the jam, to bring back the jobs.
Yes.
The reality is none of these jobs are coming back. The only jobs they're going to get are service industry jobs. Their quality of life's not coming back. The bubble in their real estate to bring back their home equity is not coming back. So everything is going to get worse for about 240 million Americans. However, the moment any of those individuals go to the street where there's any protest, first both the left and the right, if they're going as populist, will be negated or challenged. They will find themselves without an alliance, and it will take at least another 3 years. Why? Because most people on the left who are the elitist are educated, good jobs, and they're secure. They're living in the green zones, the same as on the right. If you're not in the green zone, you're
going to
be in the desert. The world can wait that long because we're going to hit peak. We've already gone past peak oil. We're now past peak water. The next major battles in the Middle East will not be over oil. They'll be over water, because without water, you cannot irrigate. Without irrigation, you don't have food. Without food, you have crisis. It'll be food crisis that brings down the Middle East, not the oil crisis. It'll be water crisis and fighting over water to see who gets to grow food to survive. Right now, you have 1 billion, 1/6 of the world's population that are food challenged. And it's going to go to at least 30%. That's about 2 billion people within the next 24 months.
And what's the United Nations stand on your comments that you just made?
If you took them comment by comment, is there food shortage by a billion people? They endorse that. Do we have food shortages? Yes. Do we have weather erratic patterns? Yes. Do we have peak oil? Yes. Peak water? Yes. Massive poverty? Yes. Will this lead to social insecurity? Yes. So individually, all of my statements are not in refute. They are all scientifically valid. It's just that we refuse in the United States media to pay attention to the obvious. You'll have Glenn Beck and others say, oh, how could we possibly have global warming? Look at the snow. It's 17 inches high. Yeah, Glenn, that was caused by warming of the Arctic ice. Now, if you want a course in geology, if you want a course in the physics of temperature, I'll be happy to share that with you.
But Gary, can you comment on what's going on out here, primarily in Los Angeles, the entertainment capital of the world?
I'll tell you what I'll do. We're out of time. I will discuss this tomorrow morning.
Is that what I see?
Oh, hold on. We're out of time, but I'll talk about this tomorrow morning from 3 a.m. to 9 a.m. on KPFK. Have a nice day, everyone.
The Gary Null Show is produced in our New York City studio. The producer is Richard Gale. The engineer is Matt Bogart. All shows are archived by Joe Kemp. The chief archivist is Sharon Pride. And the program director is Jason Tavenfeld.